Most PhD grads do two things. They either disappear into the ether of academia, or they disappear into the ether of the business world. But Jeremy Cooperstock became a minor celebrity when he unveiled his reactive room. A student of Bill Buxton's, Cooperstock developed a variation on ubiquitous computing called the reactive environment. Among other things, this video conference system allows even the most tech-phobic person to hold an international virtual meeting. And his worldwide media space invites anyone with internet access to tune in and watch what's going on in the room at any time. I talked to Jeremy Cooperstock in the media space, and as we talk, listen for little beep sounds. Each one indicates that someone, somewhere in the world, has logged on and is watching us as we speak.
The reactive environment was the concept that we came up with as the means of solving some of the problems of technology that face all of us, be we in a high-tech office like this or even in our homes, where we have supposedly simple and easy-to-use devices like our VCRs and microwave ovens, that when it turns out very few of us can actually manage the complexity of these things.
So your thesis is mainly about getting rid of the flashing 12 on the VCR that my father complains about every day.
Exactly. In fact, one-third of American VCR owners have completely given up on programming those devices. And we wonder, why are people spending millions of dollars a year buying these machines that nobody can use? And we believe the answer is, the solution to this problem is to make the technology easier to use by some function that moderates the complexity.
Despite the fact that people can't use this technology, they're buying it like crazy. You can't use your VCR, you can't use two-thirds of the functions on your computer. You buy it, and then you update it.
Right.
So how important is comprehension if people buy it anyway?
Well, it's really the key to everything, because if people are going to be buying these things and they're not going to know how to use them, they're not getting the value out of them. And the reason they keep buying them is because we don't have the alternatives yet. Even though we have the technology today to build alternatives that will work for people. For instance, we have the technology to build a VCR that, rather than requiring you to dig through a TV guide and then spend 10 minutes with this and this, trying to figure out how to program the thing so it'll record the show next week, what we should have and what we could build today is a VCR that responds to this, a single button remote control. You point to it, you say, I like the show I'm watching right now, record it.
So why don't we have it? Why are most desks littered with those gormless buttons? And why don't we just have a voice recognized technology? Why don't we have a simple button?
Well, there are two answers. First is that so far the companies maybe haven't been paying too much attention to what people actually use and how they use it. You get the engineers behind the scenes who think, wow, wouldn't it be cool if we have another 30 buttons on this device here? But I can't make heads or tails of that, can you?
No, but it feels like you're getting your money's worth. Your research in here in the reactive environment is essentially the manifestation of a ubiquitous environment. So tell us exactly what's going on here.
Exactly. Well, this reactive room here is built on the concept of making video conferencing easy. Easy enough so that somebody off the street who only has experience loading a tape in the VCR and pressing play or putting a document down over on an overhead projector can essentially participate and give an effective presentation without thinking about the complexities of how do I use this graphical user interface here. And what's going on is the computer is getting in the way rather than helping us.
So
our approach is to get the computer out of the way. If I want to show you this document here, I should just be able to put it on the table and have it come up automatically.
In other words, if I'm in another room, let's say
room. I mean, there are people at the back of the room who might want to see the document. I shouldn't need to go and use the computer to show you the document. I should just be able to put it on the table there, and the camera should see there's a document there, and should bring it up automatically on that screen there.
All right, well, I'm going to go downstairs now to the video conference room, and we'll have a little chat and test out your software.
Great.
And it better work.
Okay.
After that. All right.
Hi, Evan.
Hi.
The room just turned on.
The room has just turned on, and we are here at the conference center. Wow, so it's all auto.
Yeah, everything's ready for you to give me a presentation.
Okay, that's quite impressive. Everything turns on, and then we have the whiteboard over here where I can put a document over there. And I can also, if I wanted to, I could move the camera around myself, camera on top. And if you wanted to see me a little more closely, I'll just zoom in. Wow. There is a sense, though, you know, one of the great joys of the phone is that you can't tell what I'm doing when I'm talking to you. And I'm typing and talking to somebody and fixing my hair, and I don't know what you're doing. And here, I really have to give you full attention or you've got me.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a sense of the social awareness of the other person there is very predominant. And it's very important when you start deploying technology like this to make sure that the off button is right next to the person. If you don't want to see me, you don't want me right there in front of your face, you can just at the click of a button turn me off. We tend to use this more in the media space sense of things, which means that it's not just for video conferencing, but rather it's like a shared office. And if we're collaborating on some project together, I might want to have a virtual office that's shared with you right all open all through the day. And I've actually done this in the past. I've had collaborators who were just down the hall, and I could have easily gotten out of my chair, walked over to their desk, and asked them a question every 5 minutes. But instead, what we would do is keep open a channel like this right through the day, and because it was there all the time, it started to fade into the background. When we needed to talk to them, the other person is there. But when you want to just go about your own activity, they kind of fade out.
Now, in a reactive environment like this one, people can actually watch us right now on the World Wide Web.
That's
right. In other words, someone may be seeing that document, they may see you and I gesturing, they may see the camera crew here. It's a bit weird, this idea that we're being watched and automatically switched and monitored all the time. Do you find the issues of privacy are obviously the obvious questions that you have to ask?
Are we living in a Big Brother world where everybody can watch us? And clearly, very few people want to be watched all the time. And
except for you. The last 2 years trying to be watched.
Yeah, the reason we have this thing set up on the web is basically to start testing these ideas and pushing on the concept of let's make the world a media space. And for those people who want to be reachable, and if you need to get in touch with people and have them get in touch with you, let's make it easy. Let's get rid of these layers and layers of user interfaces and just have it at the click of a button.
It strikes me that, you know, when I look around this room and first you have that sort of weird, uncomfortable sense being surrounded by cameras, but eventually computing and media becomes the extensions. You wear it like clothing, like McLuhan said. Mm-hmm. And this seems to me the first time where you go into a room and things are reacting to you, and your body is really genuinely extended out right into the internet, right through computers, right into the lights. Do you feel that that's a whole new kind of control over this extended body that people will need to learn?
Well, it's empowerment to the individual. It's no longer the sense that I have to think in the computer's language and I have to talk to the computer to make things behave the way they want them to, or the way I want them to. Now it's I do what I think is the high-level task, that is talking to you or talking to somebody in another room and showing them documents. I'm thinking about things on a sort of human-like level. I'm not thinking along the machine line. And that gives me a sense of strength. It makes me forget about the details of the technology and gives me a sense of power.
Jeremy's now working in Japan at a research facility funded by Sony, and it's just too bad that a Canadian company didn't snap him up. Just more of the brain drain. But to see his work in action, check out the MediaSpace website at www.dgp.toronto.edu/, and then it's one of those squiggly little things, it's called a tilde, it's not a dash, our room.